VentureCast.
And then I start going through the scales. You say, you practice? I say, yeah, I practice. I start going through the scales. I didn't practice. Dang, dang. So pretty soon, Wicklesmith will be sleeping. And I would just finish the scale. And then I was 13. I didn't want to wake him up. So I just wait for him to wake up. And he go, okay, that was good. Let me teach you some Beatles songs.
Awesome.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Sitting across from us virtually is G Love of G Love and Special Sauce. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys doing, man?
We are so great. And you are here as our artist in residence for Philadelphia. Are you ready to represent?
I'm full on repping all my Sixers gear tonight. I don't even know his last name, but Dan, the equipment manager for the Sixers, just sent us this huge box of all those Sixers gear yesterday. So I'm full on repping.
I love it. The first artist in residence dressing for the part.
Okay, man.
I was going to say that I don't want to jinx anything, but as we speak, the Sixers are up 34. It's looking good.
Oh, shit. Wow. I don't think you could. Hopefully you can't jinx that.
I'd be hard to. They're playing the Pistons at home, and they got the scrubs in the third quarter. So I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling pretty good about it. So it's important that we get Philadelphia right. It is. My wife is from Philadelphia, she's from actual Philadelphia. She's from Germantown. She's not from like Wynwood or Villanova. So she's a city girl. So we had to get this right. So for those of you who are not familiar. Well, with G Love's work, I was trying to come up with a description of your sound. You'll have to tell me how I did. I was like, you take some traditional folk blues and you give it a Rolling Stonesy faces looseness and then push it through a very cool 90s modern kind of soul coughing filter. You get the G Love and Special Sauce sound. So that was my attempt to wrap up your sound in 11 seconds. So
I like it. We call it the hip hop blues.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Soul Coffin because like they were like because we were all contemporaries, you know. So if you think back to the early 90s and kind of the first kind of alternative units to use hip hop in a secondary way other than being the pure hip hop thing. You can name just a couple groups. Soul Coughing was one of them. G Love and Special Sauce is one of them. There was a band, I think, out of Holland called Urban Dance Squad.
Oh, sure.
You had the Goats out of Philadelphia. Of course, Rage Against the Machine. Of course, the Roots out of Philadelphia. And look, I'm sure there was a couple other, many, and of course, Beck out of the West Coast. But yeah. It's pretty unique time because if you ever like read the Tim Ferriss, the Malcolm Gladwell books, like The Outliers,
right?
And kind of think about it like that. If you think about the early 90s, right, we were the first kind of generation of kids to grow up with hip hop from the 80s, right? So then when we came of age, we all flipped it in a different way. Like we blended our hip hop with Delta blues, jazz, funk and rock and roll. You know, the Roots were Philly kids that grew up, you know, whatever, 20 blocks away from me, all the class of 1991. They went to Kappa, I went to GFS, and they kind of figured out a backdoor into hip hop using their live instrumentation to make hip hop. And, Soul Coughing, you know, Mike Dowdy was probably a couple years older than me. Matter of fact, a street musician friend of mine from Boston, his older sister, this guy was named Ford Amerty, his right now he goes by the artist name of Reverend Freakchild. His older sister was dating Mike Dowdy at the time.
How about that?
When I was a street musician, he was like, yeah, you got to check out my sister's boyfriend's guy has his band Soul Coffin. And then like months later, we were showcasing with them in New York. So it was like a really
awesome
small community of people. And of course, Michael Franti and Spearhead. So a little small alternative hip hop community. It was pretty cool.
Well, you named a number of Philadelphia bands there. This is the question that puts you on the spot. When you think of Philadelphia and the Philadelphia music scene, who comes to mind, like the top three quintessential Philly acts for you?
Oh, man. Wow.
I told you.
I mean, we have a song on my new record. Oh, I just happened. Where's that vinyl? I don't know. Philadelphia, Mississippi is my new. Hold on one sec.
Yeah.
Right, Philadelphia, Mississippi. I was listening to it tonight in preparation.
Yeah. Indeed. So
here's the new album.
There it is.
On the last song on the whole record is called The Philly Sound. And we kind of name drop a lot of all the Philadelphia musicians. But to answer your question, if I was going to pick the top three, that's really tough. But the ones that popped in my head were Hall & Oates and then and the Hooters. And, you know, I got to give shots to the Goats because they were a big influence back in the day. But then there's so many more. George Thorogood, The Roots, the Dead Milkmen, Ween. I mean, there's so many great acts.
I forgot Ween was from Philly. Golly.
That's so awesome.
So many. Well, let me ask you a question about where you played. I mean, I know you kind of left early and came to Boston, and feel free. You know, we had Tanya Donnelly on with our last podcast about Boston, but anything you want to say about Boston is okay by me.
Oh my God, stop it. Tim is from Boston, and we did three freaking podcasts in a row about the New England area. We are moving on, my friend.
So what I'd love to know is the kind of venues that maybe you grew up going to as a teenager, or maybe venues that you played in Philly. What are some go-to music venues?
Well, you know, the ones that are still around, there's the classic TLA, the Theater of Living Arts on South Street, around the corner from where I grew up. Down the street from there is J.C. Dobbs, which is on the corner of 3rd and South Street. And that was called the Pontiac Grill for a while, but now I think it's reverted back to J.C. Dobbs. So that's a pretty iconic venue in the 70s and 80s. And one of the first gigs we played. You had places like way back in the 80s, Grendel's Lair on South Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a Khyber Pass pub on 2nd Street in Old City, which is now like a restaurant, but that was pretty killer spot. Of course, the Electric Factory, you know, the Chestnut Cabaret, the Tower Theater, and then the legendary places like the Spectrum,
yeah,
the
Man Music Center,
the Tower Theater. So there's a lot of, Philadelphia is a wonderful town, like Boston, in the sense that there's a lot of like venues of all sizes, and now even more than ever with the Fillmore, and I mean there's just a ton of killer venues now.
That's really cool. Well, I mean, it begs the question. I don't know how much you want to get into this, but what prompted you to go to Boston when Philly has had such a great music scene already? Did you just want to kind of spread your wings and check out a new place?
No, it's a great question. I mean, part of it is just because I was born and raised in Philly, and even though it's a huge city, it's also a small town. And I just felt like I wanted to get away and not know anybody to really focus on my craft. Then there was also the fact that in Philadelphia, to busk, you know, to be a street performer was technically illegal. So I used to play out on South Street. And you know, every once in a while you get kicked off by the cops. Like if it was a busy night or whatever, they'd be like, you know,
really?
Eat it out of here. Yeah. And it wasn't, even though like when I grew up in the 70s and 80s, because I grew up right by South Street, I grew up on 2nd and Pine. and there was a ton of street performers. There was jugglers, magicians, guy that played Mozart on the glasses, folk singers, drum circles, everything. But it was all technically like illegal. So in Boston, they had a program to kind of support street musicians, where for $25 you could go to Inman Square in Cambridge and go to the City Hall there and get your street performer's license.
Yeah, how about that?
And so that was, you know, a reason, one of the reasons, other than having a friend of a friend of a friend that needed a roommate, that I wound up there and met the special sauce. So that was why I went there. And but then it was funny because then we got discovered out of Philly. So then I went.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Right.
Oh, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Really amazing.
I love that description of it as a big city in a small town. That really resonates with me. Yeah,
it is, because you know, you walk around Philly and even to this day, like, even though I haven't lived, you know, I live in Massachusetts now myself. You know, I still, every time I walk around Philly, I'm just like, I walk around the neighborhood, I run into my friends' parents,
yeah,
you know, shop owners. It is like that. If you grew up in the city, you know, you walk, you can't go a block without being, hey, you know, Mr. Yeah. So-and-so or whatever.
Yeah. Hey, what town do you live in Massachusetts?
Oh, my God.
I live in Orleans down on the Cape.
Yeah, sure. Great.
Yeah.
I grew up in Scituate. I could go on and on about it, but I won't.
But he won't. He'll stop talking about Massachusetts now and ask you a Philadelphia question.
Hey, so G-Love, what is it? What do you think you take with you, or how do you think Philadelphia has informed your artistic career, the artistic choices you make? I mean, in some ways, you still, I mean, clearly the gear is still on you. Do you think Philadelphia is still inside you?
It's something in the water.
Nice. There it is.
Water.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, it's everything. It's like, you know, like if we think about the movie Rocky,
yeah,
that really, it really truly embodies the spirit of that character, truly embodies the spirit of Philadelphia, I feel. And I say that, you know, in all seriousness and with emotional attachment, because of course, if you want to cry, there's a couple of movies you could put on. You could put on E.T.
Yep.
Or you could put on Rocky. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rocky won.
Yeah.
But like, it's the city of the underdog, and Philly's like a nitty gritty city, you know, between DC and New York. It's, it's just kind of it's a working man city. It's got a soul. It's got a rhythm. It's integrated. If you specifically speak about like the you know, the neighborhoods in Philadelphia, how it's a really walkable city, so that, you know, in the day you'd say, oh, you don't want to walk too far in one direction in any direction, because you're going to end up somewhere where you're not really welcome. Yeah. And that's like a real thing, because there would be like, you know, Italian neighborhood, Black neighborhood, sorry, Puerto Rican neighborhood, Chinese neighborhood, Irish neighborhood, Polish neighborhood. And, you know, in the 70s and 80s, these were really kind of insular neighborhoods, you know, and that was kind of real. But at the same time, I played basketball league. And so you would have this integration with people from different neighborhoods, AKA different cultures, different races and religions. And so there was a lot of togetherness, right? There was a lot of separate.
Right.
So it just specifically when I to talk about Boston, you know, when I moved to Boston, I really felt like, you know, was really segregated, and this is a tough thing to talk about, but I felt like, wow, like, you know, in the center city of Boston, it was very white, you know, cause like I lived in Jamaica Plains at first, and I was at the time very Latino. Mm. Right. And then next door was like Roxbury and Dorchester, which were the Black neighborhoods.
Right.
Of course, now there's like, now everything's a lot gentrified and everything. And that's the same thing as it is in every city across the country, but I felt like in Philadelphia, the racial and cultural lines were a lot more blurred because of places like South Street and stuff like that. And that was it's a special thing. And that created a culture of the youth, right? With skateboarding, you know, the hip hop culture, like graffiti writing, basketball, like all the basketball courts. So there was, as like a white kid growing up in the city, you know, I mean, I could be exposed and be a part of all of this inner city culture, like the stuff I just mentioned,
yeah,
and be a part of it in a certain kind of way. And that is exactly what led me to be like the musician that I was.
Right.
That I am.
Because your music itself tries to bring together all these seemingly disparate entities into one.
Yeah, for sure. Like my music, you know, goes between folk music, you know, blues music, which has nothing to do with Philadelphia, but everything to do with the Black experience.
Uh-huh.
Hip hop, which was Philadelphia, was one of the original, you know, epicenters of hip hop when it started,
right,
in the African American community, and rock and roll. And all this different stuff. So it was all happening right there. And it was all coming together. Like,
so cool.
In all places like South Street. So that was, it's really cool. Like I can talk about it from like a social, like, you know,
oh, yeah,
historian kind of way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all night long.
Yeah. All night long. Yeah. And we would listen, cause we're right with you. This is kind of the stuff we teach. So it's really neat to hear it from you.
There's a, you know, you were saying like that outlier, you mentioned outliers. There's something that's just inherently an outlier position when you're when you make an early attempt to create hybrids, right? Where you have this thing, well, this is our thing and this is your thing. And they trying to find the authentic interaction between those two things and turn it into this third new thing that lots of people have access to. That's always the first people who do that are always taking a leap of faith, that they are authentically connected to multiple spaces at once and their art can do that at the same time. And sometimes for some people that art is just making social connections. And for some it's actually making the literal art that makes those social connections. It's, you know,
yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, like I had a line in a rap that I made. It was like white kids rapping, Black kids playing rock, cheesesteak, fried onions, party on the block. One of my dear friends and my bandmate, Chuck Treese, who's touring with me, and who was my partner in making the Philadelphia Mississippi album, and he wrote many of these tunes on here, and produced the album. Chuck is just the same way that, like, you know, my life is kind of, you know, crossed the tracks, as you could say. His life also crossed the tracks in the sense that he's a Philadelphia kid. He's the first African-American person to be on the cover of Thrasher Skate magazine in the 80s.
Cool.
So and he's also one of the founding members of the Black Rock Coalition you know, showcases people like, you know, Living Color and Fishbone, Bad Brains, this whole kind of outlier community of African-American rock and roll musicians.
Rockers, yeah.
So again, cool. it's just this really cultural stew, you know what I mean?
Wow.
And that's what music and sports have the ability to do, is to get people together and get people to cross those lines. And what greater thing could you hope to achieve than that, you know?
Right.
Yep, absolutely. I play bass for Angela Moore, Fishbone, in a solo thing for several years, and just watching how that guy can just connect. I mean, he turns a crowd into a single entity in about 45 seconds, and he's always been that way. And it's because he just did not respect or acknowledge that there were lines he wasn't supposed to step over. Right.
Right.
Hey, a habitual line stepper, to quote Charlie Murphy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I told you we'd only grab 20 minutes of your time or so. So I if I could ask one final question, the because I do like this. This kind of gets a little personal. I mean, do you have a favorite musical memory, whether it's being a kid in Philadelphia or a musical memory as an adult performing and getting on stage in Philadelphia? Like, what warms your heart when you think of music in Philadelphia and your own life?
Well, I'm just going to go with the first thing that pops in my head, and it's totally Philadelphia-centric. Uh-huh. And it goes back to the South Street days. But if anybody listening remembers Waco Smith, who was kind of a legendary South Street character, he was from Waco, Texas. He was his office was the payphone on 3rd and South. and my mother put a sign up at the AMP, which is a supermarket, with, you know, the pull off things, you know, my son needs guitar lessons. And I started studying with this guy, Waco Smith. And growing up, this guy was like 5'3". Every day of the year, no matter how hot or cold it was, he'd wear a red flannel shirt, jeans cut off at the shoes, because they were, you couldn't buy a pair of jeans with that short of a leg.
Oh,
right?
Oh man.
Cowboy boots and those brown work gloves with the red felt interior.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought he was homeless. Why did he wear his gloves? He wore his gloves because he was classically trained Juilliard flamenco and classical guitarist. He had his nails done. But I took guitar lessons from him. So my musical memory from Philadelphia is studying with Waco Smith. And I'd be up in his little apartment where he had one light, two chairs, one single bed, a half empty bottle of Jack Daniels, chair bathroom down the hall. And then I start going through the scales. He say, "You practice?" I say, "Yeah, I practice." I start going through the scales. I didn't practice. Ding, ding. So pretty soon Waco Smith will be sleeping. And I would just finish the scale. And then I was 13. I didn't want to wake him up. So I just wait for him to wake up. And he go, "Okay, that was good. Let me teach you some Beatles songs."
Awesome.
Waco Smith.
That's so much better than like the piano teacher who like has the one bedroom apartment and the giant piano with like the rock candy on it. Like, that's a much better first teacher.
Falling asleep during your lesson. Well, I got to tell you, when I was teaching out in Las Vegas in 96, and my volleyball players were all excited to go see Dave Matthews. And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I'm going too." And they're like, "What, coach, you're going to Dave Matthews?" I'm like, "Well, actually, I'm going to G Love and Special Sauce." And they were like, "Who the heck is G Love and Special Sauce?" I'm like, "Oh, wait till you get a load of G Love and Special Sauce." I was like, "I've seen him a bunch of times. He's great." I see them in between sets at the Thomas Mack Center in Vegas, and Anne Marie Bradford. I was like, "What'd you think?" She goes, "Coach, he sang a song about cold beverages." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. That's why it's great." So
that's awesome. I completely remember that show at UNLV. Actually, yeah. I remember that show because I have a list of stupid things that I have said to Dave Matthews over the years.
Okay. What'd you say?
That was probably one of the first ones I said, because Dave's like the sweetest guy ever.
Uh-huh.
And actually that day of that show, I had lunch with him at catering.
Uh-huh.
And I was telling him about my friend Jasper's band. And I said to Dave, I said, "These guys are so awesome, man. They would win any battle of the bands." That was the first stupid thing I said to Dave. A lot of
all right. Well, G Love, thank you so much for being. Oh, and you're coming to my hometown. You're coming to Asheville on February 8th.
Yep. Salvage Station.
Cannot wait. I'll see you at Salvage Station. I will be there. So G Love and Special Sauce album came out last year called Philadelphia, Mississippi. He's on tour right now. Check him out. You're on tour for like 3 months, right?
Yeah, on tour forever. So if anyone wants to find more about me, they go to Twitter at GLove, Philly GLove on Instagram, GLove and Special Sauce on Facebook.
All right.
If anybody's into NFTs, you can mint your free GLove NFT at nft.philadelphonic.com. And
Yeah,
there's links to everything on the Twitter and stuff. So thanks, guys. That was a pleasure.
Thanks. Love.
Great. Tim, do you hear how he's got all that information ready for our listeners? We gotta, one of these days, we might even like have
we might even account. Get that there. Yeah. Someday.
Go Eagles. Go Eagles.
All right.
Oh, exactly. Hey, Matt, thanks so much. A pleasure
we'll
to
see
meet
you later.
You. All best.
Bye, G Love.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Mile, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the WannaBet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but WannaBet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, roger.
Electric acid.
Welcome to Sara Talk Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned into a bit of a different type of show. I'm Sara B and I'm your host. You can find me on my IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA. I talk about amazing, relevant conversations and topics and what functions that goes on in this magical, wonderful, wonderful city of the City of Angels. My IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA.
Electric Acid.